Hello and welcome to week 18 of From the Basement Bar podcast. We are back after a week off due to catching the COVID, just like seemingly every person in the entire country did. We were just breaking records daily, and I was one of those statistics. I'm convinced there's not a single person who actually knows what the fuck's going on at this point. No matter what side of the aisle you're on, it's just a crapshoot, really. Everyone's getting it, and everyone seems to be recovering at this point. But to those that are not recovering as quickly, I feel for you. It was a few days down and out, laying in bed, quarantining for what feels like forever. But we're back, and enough with that. We were just lucky enough that the teams in the semifinals did not get COVID, and one of those horrible scenarios that we discussed a few weeks back about the contingency plans the committee put in place were not enacted. So fingers crossed the next few days do not take a turn for the worst, and the national championship game does go off without COVID consequences. We have reached that beautiful pinnacle of the season, the week and the game. All these players across the country have been strapping their helmets on to play in, and all us hacks who discuss and predict wrongly have waited for since the start of this season. The semis did not go as I had hoped, but maybe, just maybe, this wonderful Vegas line that has been handed to us on a silver platter will turn things around in my favor for the final week of the season. The national championship is not the only storyline in town, as we will have a few other things to discuss on this podcast. And unfortunately, with me still being in a bit of recovery mode, my drink of choice this week is just good old water. But not that tap water. It's right from the door in my fridge, so at least I have that going for me here. But let's move along and get into it with the college football season coming to a close. We're going to start off with some season recaps, and we're going to start off with the Georgia Bulldogs. So for the first 3 months of the season, it was Georgia's world, and everyone else was just living in it, and they were all just playing for second place, it seems like. That is until Kirby Smart ran into his old buddy Nick Saban in the SEC championship game, and they were absolutely exposed. That's now seven in a row in the Bama-Georgia series. This Bulldogs defense, they were on pace to be one of the, if not the best, to ever do it, until they ran into Bryce Young and that Crimson Tide offense. For the regular season, before they hit that wall that was Alabama, they finished only giving up 6.5 points a game. That's less than a fucking touchdown a game that they were giving up. The defense was crazy suffocating. And it was fun to watch how dominant Kirby Smart had his defense playing. It seemed like nobody could figure them out. So let's just go through their schedule. You know, they started that year with that highly anticipated matchup with then-ranked 3 Clemson. Clemson turned out to not be that great. Their offense went through a real big lull. They never really figured it out until later in the year. And that was a defensive slugfest. 10-3. Clemson did, as always, have a good defense. And that was actually JT Daniels played a lot in that game and put up 135 yards passing against that Clemson defense. They did win. Georgia did win 10-3. It was a solid game, and one that I thought, looking back on, you know, seemed like Georgia's offense was going to be their downfall. But as things picked up, that Georgia offense did get much better, and their defense stayed just as dominant as we saw on opening weekend against Clemson with that 10-3 victory. The following week, they ran over a UAB team. This was nothing of any worry for the Georgia Bulldogs before, after, during. 56-7 victory over UAB. Then conference play started with a South Carolina victory, and South Carolina back then was horrible. They did pick it up later in the year. They did get a little bit better, South Carolina, but Georgia ran over them 40-13. That wasn't even close. This was the last game that JT Daniels really had any type of impact in at the quarterback position. It was Stenson Bennett the rest of the way, but JT did put up a 300-yard passing game that day. Then we moved on to a shellacking of the Vanderbilt Commodores, 62-0. It was an embarrassment, but Georgia had seemed to been hitting their stride. And that was going into a top 10 matchup against an Arkansas team who looked to be, you know, who looked to be the fun storyline in the SEC. That kind of out of nowhere team, Sam Pittman, really had the Razorbacks looking like they could be a special story in college football. And they hit their first prime time, that 3:30 big SEC game time, and in front of the entire country. Everybody was ready for that game. All eyes were glued to this SEC top 10 matchup, and Georgia really showed us who they were, and Arkansas showed us they were not ready for the big time, as Arkansas got pummeled 37-0. If you remember, KJ Jefferson looked lost in that game. He did not look like he knew what he was doing, and that was all due to that Georgia defense, who was absolutely suffocating, got after him all day, gave him looks that he just hadn't seen before. And they just destroyed Arkansas 37-0. It was an absolute embarrassment for Pittman and that Razorback team, but they learned from it to their credit, and they ended up having a very, very good season in Arkansas that they can build on. Moving on, Georgia had another top 25 matchup. This was with Auburn, who was ranked 18th at the time. And they again poured it on in another ranked matchup with a 34-10 victory there. It really wasn't in doubt. They Bad Bo Nix was on display, as I've talked about multiple times throughout this course of the year on multiple podcasts. Good Bo Nix is good. Bad Bo Nix is really bad. And of course, Georgia's defense, they showed us Bad Bo Nix that day. Then another highly ranked big matchup in the SEC occurred. This was the Arkansas game was a huge matchup, but then this Kentucky game, where Kentucky was ranked 11th, they were rolling, they had just beaten Florida, they looked like they were ready to make some noise in the SEC. Mike Stoops had the Wildcats playing very well, and this was the third ranked game in a row for the Georgia Bulldogs. So you thought maybe one of these teams would provide a hiccup, and Kentucky just did not do that. Again, Georgia puts up 30, and they hold that Kentucky offense led by Will Levis to only 13 points. It was a blowout from start to finish. The 13 actually makes it look better than what it really was for that entire game, as they tacked on some late points there. But 30-10 victory over Kentucky. Then the world's largest outdoor cocktail party occurred, Florida. And this was when they benched Emory Jones, and the Gator faithful were excited to finally get AR-15 Anthony Richardson in there. And things did go along the way that Dan Mullen and the Gators were looking for about almost two quarters, until the final 2 minutes of that second quarter right before halftime, and Georgia just poured it on. It was turnovers, and converting and putting points on the board due to those Florida turnovers, and they never looked back in the second half, as they have done what they've done for quite some time, except for last year, and beat their rival, the Florida Gators, in Jacksonville 34-7. Florida really just nosedived after that. I mean, they were already on that nosedive trajectory, but it got way worse for Florida. And Dan Mullen, as we all know, was then soon out of a job, as the Billy Napier tenure in Florida will start next year. Moving on to Missouri, they took on a Missouri team who had a very good season. I was impressed by Missouri, but not in this game. Missouri got pummeled, as every team did at this stage in the season, against Georgia, 43-6. Then Tennessee, who is another team that is on the upswing. You know, Josh Heupel has that team looking good. And Hendon Hooker, you know, look out for him as a dark horse Heisman candidate. Look out for the Tennessee Volunteers as a team that could give Georgia in the SEC East some trouble next year. They could be the second best team in the SEC East, but they were not ready this year, clearly, with the 41-17 loss to the Georgia Bulldogs. Then we had a Charleston Southern game, 56-7. No need to touch on that. Then the annual in-state rivalry game, which isn't much of a rivalry, against Georgia Tech. They embarrassed a bad Georgia Tech team, 45-0, and they looked to be just rolling over teams. This was the point of the season where it was Georgia was just going to crush everyone, including Alabama in the SEC championship game. But everything came to an absolute screeching halt, as it always does when Kirby Smart and the Georgia Bulldogs take on Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide. And Bryce Young won the Heisman Trophy in the SEC championship game as he threw all over and embarrassed that Georgia defense. Like, they were shell-shocked. It was shocking to watch how well those receivers for Alabama and Bryce Young matched up and just tore up the Georgia Bulldogs defense to 41 points. Remember, they were only giving up 6.5 points entering into this game. Tennessee put up 17 on them, and Kentucky put up 13. But other than that, we're talking about 7-6, 7-0 points in those other games. And Alabama, 41 points. Georgia was never really in it after the first quarter. 41-24. It was an ugly, ugly loss. One that Georgia and pretty much everybody in the college football universe did not see coming in that fashion. And not in that fashion. Not in a beat-down fashion. You know, Alabama, yes, of course, Alabama always has a chance. It's the SEC championship game. You give Nick Saban a title to win, he's going to win the title. But to be embarrassed and blown out, that was the shocking part in that game. And then we went to the semifinals, as, of course, Georgia was going to get into the semifinals, as they should, even with that beatdown from Alabama. They played a Michigan team, and they went back to their ways. Georgia was back, and they let Michigan know it. Aiden Hutchinson, somehow the Heisman runner-up, was pancaked multiple times by this Georgia offense. He made zero impact. Stenson Bennett had probably his best game of the year. Stenson Bennett played out of his mind, and that defense, they got back on track, only allowing 11 points, 34-11, as they crushed Michigan. It wasn't a game at all. There wasn't even a time where you thought Michigan might win. No, Georgia dominated. Georgia absolutely dominated the Michigan Wolverines in that one, setting up this national championship game. So let's jump into the Alabama season. This season was not the typical dominant Crimson Tide type of year. Yes, Bryce Young, he did go on and he won the Heisman, but that happened very late in the season with the shocking lights-out performance, as we just spoke about, in the SEC championship game against Georgia. That really sealed the deal. It was up in the air. Nobody really knew who was going to win the Heisman. It could have gone multiple ways. He cemented it in that game. And prior to that, a lot of games Bama played were up for grabs. Just like the Heisman Trophy was up for grabs, Bama played in a few games where they could have easily ended up with an L in the column. That did not happen. They were lucky. They really were lucky to even make it to this point. But as we all know, Saban finds his way here one way or another. And once he's here, he does not screw it up. So let's take a look at their roller coaster of a ride season. And they started out with a big, highly anticipated matchup coming into the season. Now, this Miami team ultimately did not meet expectations, and this game did not meet the expectations, as Bama started their year out in a big way, in a big beatdown of then-ranked 14 Miami Hurricanes, who now has a new coach, Mario Cristobal. So that basically tells you how the hurricane season went, and it started off badly, 44-13. Alabama ran all over Miami. That game was over in the first quarter. It was first quarter. That game was done deal. Then we went on to a Mercer game where actually they didn't look fantastic against Mercer. Yeah, they beat them 48-14. The score shows, an easy win, but it wasn't all that easy. There were some miscues in that game, and that led us to a huge matchup with Florida in the Swamp, visiting Ben Hill Griffin Stadium against a Florida Gators team who was not the team that we saw by the end of the year. Dan Mullen looked like he had this Florida team in contention for possibly the SEC East, and it looked like there was a chance they could beat Alabama. I actually was at this game. It was the loudest game I have been to. And things really changed for both schools after this game. It felt like Florida just, they had a missed extra point earlier in the game. Then they went down big and they fought their way back. They ran all over that Alabama defense. That offense back then, Florida's rushing offense, was the best in the country at that point. And this was AR-15, Anthony Richardson, played no role at all. Remember, he was recovering from the hamstring from a few games before that. So this was all Emory Jones, and was really Emory Jones' highlight of the season, was Florida's highlight of the season. And for Florida, that's not a good thing when the highlight of the season is a loss, a close loss to Alabama, 31-29. They did have a chance late in that game. Emory Jones just could not get the two-point conversion to go. And this was one of those games where it's like, hey, Alabama has flaws. That defense can be had. This team can be had. You can slow them down. And Florida almost pulled off that upset. This was one of those games where things could have just completely blew up this Alabama season. Instead, it blew up Florida's season as they couldn't pull it off at home. Then we moved on to a Southern Miss game where they just completely ran all over Southern Miss, as they should have, 63-14. Then Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin, another disciple of Nick Saban, another guy that Nick Saban continues to kick around and bully, and he bullied them. Ole Miss, they never really had a chance in this. Remember, Kiffin made some questionable decisions going for it on fourth down a few times, and really let the game get out of hand early. And Matt Corral never could get anything going. That defense of Alabama was all over him, 42-21. That game was never really in question. And it looked like Alabama was probably, seemed like they were hitting their stride. That was not the case. As Texas A&M, a team that was not playing great football at this time either. Remember, Texas A&M started off with a slow victory, 7-0 against Colorado. Lost their quarterback, Zach Calzada's in, and he's not playing great football. Texas A&M doesn't look like they had that impact player on offense. They weren't scoring a lot of points. And what did they do? They went in and scored 41 on Alabama. 41-38 victory. Yeah, the lone red mark on the Crimson Tide season came from Jimbo Fisher, who became the first ex-Saban assistant to finally get a victory against Nick. And Texas A&M, 41-38, great defense they had. Obviously didn't look, Bama was still able to put up 38 points, but Bryce Young just didn't look himself. He had that turnover in the red zone, the interception in the end zone. It was an ugly day for Alabama, but I think they really used that. And Nick Saban, I think, really used that game to motivate his guys for the rest of the year, because the next game, they completely shut down Mike Leach in that Will Rogers offense. Now, Will Rogers, he threw for a ton of yards this year. He put up a ton of points. Mississippi State offense was good, and this Mississippi State team overall was solid, but they were blown out 49-9. You just knew Alabama was not, they were going to come into that game, whoever it was, and they were going to dominate them. And that's exactly what they did. Then they went on to play a Tennessee team, which I discussed how Heupel had that team. You know, Tennessee looking pretty solid, and they're on the upswing. But just like Georgia, Alabama crushed them 52-24. Never really in doubt, but Tennessee did play well in that game. You know, putting up 24 points. They just couldn't stop the Crimson Tide offense. Then LSU, that rivalry game where Ed Orgeron, you know, he always gets his team to play, and LSU is always going to get up for this game. And they gave them trouble. They gave Alabama real trouble. This game was in doubt. It was in doubt. 20-14 ended up being an Alabama victory, but it was another one of those games that could have went the other way and just blew up. They lose that game at that point. They're not in the playoffs. They're not in the playoffs. And Coach O, he wanted that one. He wanted that one because he was getting ready to be on the way out. New Mexico State then comes into town and gets embarrassed 59-3 as Alabama needed a little cupcake on their schedule to feel good about themselves. Arkansas, who unlike Georgia, Bama had real trouble with Arkansas in this one. It was a 42-35 victory for Alabama, but KJ Jefferson looked much better and looked way better than he did against Georgia. The Bama defense was not able to confuse Arkansas like Georgia was able to do. And that was a tough, tough game. Another one of those. There was about four games, and that was one of them where Alabama looked like they could lose. It ultimately did not happen as Bryce Young, you know, threw for 559 yards. It was the biggest performance yard-wise for him on the entire season. It was ugly, but not as ugly as the Iron Bowl the following week against Auburn, rival Auburn, who kind of was in a tailspin. They weren't playing great football. Auburn didn't even have Bo Nix. Bo Nix got hurt. But it took four OTs, and Auburn really had this game. I mean, remember the running back, Tank Bigsby? He goes out of bounds. If he doesn't go out of bounds, Bama does not have that opportunity to take that 95-yard drive, 90-plus-yard drive, and ultimately tie the game in regulation. There would be no overtime. There would be no Alabama in the playoffs. Auburn flat-out blew that game. But once you knew it went into overtime, once they tied it up, once they made that drive, you just knew Auburn was going to lose that game. There was just no chance at that point, and they snuck. The other ones, the Florida one, the Arkansas one, the LSU one, Alabama won that game. They did enough to win that game. Auburn left them off the hook. Auburn lost that game. Alabama did not win that game. So that was the last impression we had of this Alabama team heading into the SEC championship game. And you thought, it's not looking pretty. It's not looking pretty going against Georgia, who is crushing people, rolling over people, you know, defense suffocating as we spoke about. And that's when things changed in the college football world. That's when Alabama said, hey, we're still Alabama. Nick Saban said, I'm still Nick Saban. This is what we play for. We get up for these games. We know how to win championships. And they pummeled Georgia, as we already discussed. And that was the game where Bryce Young claimed the Heisman Trophy. It was over for them, for anybody in the Heisman race at that point, when Bryce Young put up 421 yards and absolutely embarrassed the Georgia Bulldog defense like no one has all season. No one has even come close to what Georgia, to doing that to Georgia all year. Bama, Nick Saban, again, bodied Kirby Smart. Poor Kirby Smart cannot beat Nick Saban. He will have a chance in a rematch. Not sure if he really wants that rematch. And then they went on to the semifinal game against Cincinnati. And this was the Cincinnati was the feel good, the group of five team who finally broke through, who finally did it for the smaller schools. And they did deserve it. Unlike the Michigan game with Georgia in that semifinal where Michigan had no chance, at least Cincinnati kept you thinking. They hung in there. If it wasn't for that late touchdown they gave up, at the end of the first half. That's when things seemed like it might be out of reach. But Cincinnati, they hung in. Their defense played fantastic. Bryce Young did not look great at all. He looked uncomfortable in the pocket. His throws were off. Cincinnati played him well, maybe better than anyone has all season. It was his lowest output. He didn't even reach 200 yards, 181 yards that day. But they couldn't stop anything. Robinson Jr. just ran all over the Cincinnati defense. It was the big boys up front. It was just a different level, a different size, different athletic ability at that front line there for Alabama. They were just too big, too fast, too strong, too well-coached for Cincinnati to really have a chance in the trenches. And Robinson Jr., 200-plus yards. He was the reason they won that game. Ran all over Cincinnati, 27-6. But it was a decent game. Cincinnati proved that they did deserve to be there at least, which is good for any group of five hoping to break through again. It wasn't like, they got in, we let them in finally, and they got embarrassed. That didn't happen. There was a ton of Oklahoma teams that got embarrassed much worse than Cincinnati did. There's been a few Notre Dame teams that have gotten embarrassed much worse than Cincinnati did. Cincinnati looked like they belonged, but Alabama is just Alabama. You give Saban 3 weeks to prepare, he's going to eat up anybody. He's going to eat up anybody, and that's what they did. 27-6 victory there. So those are the season recaps between our two finalists. And before we get into, let's take a little break from the national championship and let's get into some of these other storylines that is going on. There are some other happenings in the college football world right now. And one of those, of course, has been the talk, is the transfer portal. And Caleb Williams, the Oklahoma quarterback, he has entered the transfer portal. Now, he could stay, although I think that is a long shot. I don't think you enter and then stay. It's very rare that occurs. Entering this season, Oklahoma had two stud quarterbacks. Caleb Williams, who most people didn't really know about, but he was a five-star recruit. He was a top recruit coming in, so you knew he had talent. And then you had Spencer Rattler, who was the front runner. It wasn't even close. He was the front runner. And, you know, by some indication, seemed like he could be the number one overall pick, or at least the number one quarterback off the board in the NFL draft. So they had two stud quarterbacks, and they had the quarterback whisperer in Lincoln Riley, the quarterback guru of our time, Lincoln Riley. Now they will almost certainly enter next season with none of the above. With Caleb Williams pulling that shot, it was a bit of a shocking move, in my opinion, to enter the transfer portal. I kind of thought after he stayed and went through the bowl game, he was going to stick it out as a Sooner under the new regime led by Brett Venables, who I had been clamoring for to get a head coaching job. I think it was a fantastic hire, especially with Oklahoma moving to the SEC and need a defensive-minded coach. And Brett Venables has been fantastic leading the way for Clemson. And although he's not an offensive-minded guy, he brought in a solid offensive coordinator and former Ole Miss Rebel assistant Jeff Lebby, who helped orchestrate an offense that saw Matt Corral have a fantastic year, one that had him in the Heisman race all year long, even with a bum ankle for half of the time, and who is now, Matt Corral is on his way to being a first-round NFL draft pick. So you thought Caleb Williams, okay, was looking at this, putting together a solid coaching staff, could be utilized in the same way Matt Corral was utilized, but clearly money talks now in college football for these players, as he will without a doubt be looking for the biggest NIL deal to lure him away. Look, I get it. Lincoln Riley up and left without any type of warning, and Williams chose Oklahoma under the impression he would be mentored by Riley. So this move is more warranted, I would say, than some of the others in the country, but this is the stuff that's just going to keep happening. We have to get used to it. It will be commonplace, if it's not already, in the college football world. So maybe let's stop complaining about these players doing it. As much as I don't think it's that great for the sport, if we continue down this path, we'll just be ranting and raving until we're blue in the face, talking about these players entering the transfer. It's just going to happen. Money is being thrown around in college football. These players are now getting millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars. When you're Caleb Williams, you can search for this money now. You can enter the transfer portal. So what are we, you know, we're just going to constantly complain. I think we got to accept it at this point. It is what it is at this moment. It really is. Maybe he follows Riley to USC, but I don't find that very likely. Georgia, they might be in the market for a quarterback, and some speculation has been thrown around, and I think this is an interesting one, about joining up with Chip Kelly, Chipacek at UCLA, and going toe-to-toe with his former coach in the Pac-12. I think that would be fun. That would probably be the most interesting move. And then you get to play in the Pac-12, which is much easier than every other Power 5 conference. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see whoever's going to throw him the money. UCLA, I'm sure, has some guys around there that could give him some deals. And speaking of UCLA, now that they had gotten a quarterback to come in the transfer portal, in Dylan Gabriel from UCF, but he has now flipped his transfer commit from UCLA to Oklahoma. As soon as Caleb Williams put his name in the Air app, Dylan Gabriel said peace out to UCLA, who had just announced his transfer to and said, hello, Oklahoma. And Gabriel's coming off an injury-filled season that saw him only play in 3 games. It was his 3rd season at UCF, and the previous 2 were damn good. The kid can play. The kid can throw the football. 3,600-plus yards and 27 TDs to only 7 interceptions in 2019, and he followed that up with an even more proficient season, 3,570 yards, with a TD to interception of 32-4. Now, he's not the biggest guy, you know, under center in the country at 6 foot, 200 pounds, and he will not cause too much trouble with his legs, but given some ballers around him on offense, I'd expect another, you know, around 30 TD season for Gabriel at Oklahoma. Let's move on to a college coach who just had his best season ever at the helm of Michigan. Jim Harbaugh. Like I said, most accomplished season at Michigan. He finally stopped being Ohio State's little bitch for one season. But it just might be his last at his alma mater. With a few enticing NFL job openings with young QBs, you know, they're opening up, they're popping up. He could be heading back to the top league, rejoining his older bro, John, in the ranks of an NFL head coach. I don't like this move for him, personally. I don't like the jump back to the NFL. It finally seems like he has the Michigan program back as true contenders. And the leash that he's been given by Michigan is a very long one. A very long one. They will never oust him in Ann Arbor. It's just not going to happen. They're not going to get rid of Harbaugh. But the NFL, they toss you out after one bad season following 3 straight NFC championship games and a Super Bowl appearance where he was one play away from winning the Super Bowl. He was gone. They had no time for him. You know, his style of play or his style of coaching rubs guys the wrong way. And when you get to the pro level, as we saw with Urban Meyer, these guys, albeit, you know, Harbaugh had a ton of success in the NFL, but he is suited for the college game, and he's suited to build what they're doing at Michigan. Build upon this. Why go back to that type of uncertainty when you can live as the most important man in town, which is what he is? Sure, you know, Harbaugh will have his success in the NFL, but it's just not worth the risk. You know, unless he knows overtaking Ohio State was an aberration, who knows? Maybe he's scared. Maybe he doesn't think that he can continually beat Ohio State, that he can keep winning Big Ten championships. And if that's the case, it's hard to blame the guy for running scared. But let's be clear. That's exactly what it would be if he left Michigan. He would be running scared of Ohio State. Stay in Michigan. Build upon it. I've heard all this talk about, you know, he has to go up against Ohio State. You know, can they keep up? Can they get the guys at Michigan? Can Michigan compete on this level? It's Michigan. When did we forget that the Michigan Wolverines are one of the best most historic programs in all of college football history, and we're treating them like no person can ever get Michigan back on top of Ohio State, can ever get Michigan to win national titles? Since when? That's what Harbaugh was brought in to do. Beating Ohio State 1 year? That's not enough. That's not enough. You can't. How can you sleep at night knowing that you got one fluke win over Ohio State? One fluke year where you were the best team. You got to do it year after year. That's what you were brought into Michigan to do. Don't run away to the NFL. Stay in the college. Be the man. Build this Michigan program. Don't let Ohio State go back to the top. So let's move on to the expanding playoffs talk. And every year, the talk, or should I say the whining, starts. Should we expand the playoffs? Why can't we have more teams? If only they would include more teams, blah, blah, blah. Shut the hell up with this. Year after year, all of college football struggles to even find four teams who deserve the same field in these playoffs. You know, it's quite embarrassing, some of the outcomes that we have seen over the years in the semifinals. And to add more teams, that's not going to solve anything. We're just going to see more blowouts. We're just going to see more blowouts if we add more teams. There's not enough good teams in college football year over year to expand the playoffs. Yeah, there would be great storylines. Going into the game, it might seem like a good game, but these teams don't deserve it. They simply don't. Let's look at some of these past games. The first year, we had Oregon play a Florida State team, and they pummeled them 59-20. It was ugly. The Ohio State-Alabama game was better, but, you know, it was Ohio State-Alabama, because then Ohio State went on and crushed Oregon 42-20. So really, that Alabama-Ohio State game, those were the best two teams in the country. We had two teams that could compete. The following year, Clemson blows out Oklahoma 37-17. Alabama embarrasses and blanks Michigan State 38-0. Again, we only had two teams that really deserved to be on the same field together. The next year, Alabama plays a bad Pac-12 team. The last time the Pac-12 sniffed the playoffs with Washington, got beat. And beat them 24-7. It wasn't even close. Washington did not belong on the same field. Clemson embarrassed and blanked Ohio State 31-0. We had an epic national championship game between Clemson and Alabama, the 35-31 victory for Clemson. But again, we had two teams that deserved to be on the field together, not four. So what happens if we expand to 6, 8, 10, 12? We're not going to get good competition, good teams that deserve to be there. Then we move on to the 2017-2018 season, and we had Alabama. You know, they beat Clemson 24-6. They handled them. This was the first time where Clemson really didn't belong on the field with Alabama. Now, we did have one of the most epic semifinal games that we have seen in the college football playoffs. This year, that year was fantastic, where Georgia played Oklahoma that year. Baker Mayfield, it went to a double overtime game. Oklahoma was able to put up a ton of points on a good SEC defense. And that was the only game where Oklahoma really looked like they belonged and could get a semifinal victory. So there we go. That was the first year where there was maybe, you could argue, there were four teams good enough to be on the same field together. Then we move on to the next year. Alabama plays Oklahoma. Oklahoma plays Alabama tough. A little bit better. Not as good as they played Georgia, but they played them tough. It was Baker's last year. Alabama won 45-34. But this was in the other semifinal game, we had another blowout. And it was that Notre Dame team getting blown out. A Notre Dame team who constantly was getting love in the college football playoffs and was constantly getting blown out. Clemson 30-3 over Notre Dame. Again, we have another game where it's a blowout. We have another time where really two teams belonged together, because Clemson then went on and crushed Alabama in that national championship game 44-16. Moving on, we had the LSU team, maybe the best team that has ever stepped feet on the field, was that LSU team led by Joe Burrow. And they embarrassed an Oklahoma team 63-28. Oklahoma, again, getting beat. We had a decent game with Clemson and Ohio State, but You know, nobody deserved to even be on the field with LSU that year. As they went on and crushed Clemson, Joe Burrow had an epic season, maybe the best season we'll ever see from a quarterback, as LSU capped off a historic season. To me, the best team I have ever witnessed. The way they played, it was incredible. Nobody was touching LSU. So there was barely four teams that could compete again. Really, there was no team. There was one team that stood alone. Then we move on. Alabama crushes Notre Dame. Notre Dame, again, proves they don't belong. Ohio State crushes Clemson. Then Alabama crushes Ohio State. We're struggling. We're struggling to find four teams. We're struggling. This year, Michigan did not belong. They were embarrassed by Georgia. Cincinnati, they hung in there. They hung in there, but they could only muster 6 points. Now we'll have Alabama, Georgia, and those two teams do belong. There are two teams this year that belong on the same field together, and it's Alabama and Georgia, and Georgia better show up, or it's just one team that really belongs, and it might be Alabama if we have the same repeat performance that we saw in the SEC championship game. So again, we're struggling to find teams that belong to be on the same field. Don't expand the playoffs. There's no point. There's no point. If you want better football, that's not the route, clearly, because we don't have enough. And we see it year after year after year to even find four. Let's touch on another thing where Kirk Herbstreit, his comments, which got a ton of pushback on. He even had to apologize, kind of walk it back a little bit, which I thought was stupid. Don't walk anything. If you have comments, just say them and stick by them. You know, it wasn't that controversial. But Herbstreit, we'll just touch on it. Quote, I just don't understand. If you don't make it to the playoff, how is it meaningless to play football and compete? Isn't that what we do as football players? We compete. I don't know if expanding the playoffs, here's that expanding playoff, is going to change anything. I think this era of player just doesn't love football. Now, it's that last line. I think this era of player just doesn't love football. And that's the one that he's getting flack for. But he's not wrong. He's right. These bowl games, they don't mean shit. They don't mean anything anymore. You can't even look at it and be like, okay, the SEC had a losing record this year in bowl games. It doesn't matter because guys aren't even playing. Guys are already transferring. Coaches are already gone. Players are sitting out to go to the NFL draft. They're looking for their own selfish needs, their own selfish goals, which it's hard to blame them. There's a ton of money. You know, you get hurt in a bowl game. You lose your chance to be a high draft pick. I get that. But bowl games used to mean something. It used to be, bowl season used to be something that you was a reward for everything that you put into the year, everything that you did, your teammates, your coaching staff, your fan base. You know, it was still fun to have that bowl game to look forward to be bowl eligible, to win bowl game, to play a different conference, to fight for that conference, you know, that standing on the national stage. Be like, all right, the SEC won this many games. Oh, the Big Ten beat the SEC in this many games. It was fun. Now it doesn't mean anything. And Herbstreit can't be wrong. If you love the game of football, and we still see it with some guys, Matt Corral, you know, unfortunately he did end up getting hurt in that bowl game. But Matt Corral said, I'm fighting. I'm playing for my guys. I'm playing for those guys in the locker room. We bled and we sweat and we put in the hard work all year. Matt Corral wasn't going to not play in that game. It took an injury for him to not play in that game. And he's a first-round draft pick. He'll still be a first-round draft pick. Injury's not going to stop Matt Corral from having a career. And like he said, if it did, then it wasn't meant to be. Matt Corral loves football. We need more Matt Corrals in football. We need more Matt Corrals that want to just play the game, that want to do it for the fan base, that want to do it for the teammate, that want to do it for his school, school pride. Where's school pride? School pride's gone. School pride is over. These guys don't have it. Kirk Herbstreit is right. Stop giving him shit for it. I like what he said. I'm glad he said it. All right, moving on from that. Let's get into what we all been waiting for, what we've watched college football week in and week out, every weekend for this game, the national championship. So let's get into it. Now, we get a rematch. And this was not the rematch we were all hoping would happen. Unless you were a Bulldog fan. And even then, you might not have wanted this rematch to occur. I wanted nothing to do with this rematch. Once the playoffs matchups were cemented, I didn't want this. This was the last thing that I wanted to watch happen. It's just a very boring story, in my opinion. We have seen this before, and it always ends in a Bama win. Could it be different this time? Sure, but it's unlikely. What has Kirby Smart done to make you think he can now all of a sudden outcoach his mentor, massive shadow Nick Saban? The answer is absolutely nothing. Does Kirby have more talent that he might be able to use to overcome his inability to outdo Saban? The answer to that is no as well. So same team, same story, same outcome. It certainly is a tall task, I will say, to beat a team twice in a season, especially this, you know, in this small of a time period. And one that is as gifted as this Georgia Bulldog team is, but we're talking about Alabama, and no task ever seems too tall. The last time Georgia beat Alabama, Kirby was the defensive back coach on Nick Saban's staff at Alabama. Things early on in the season looked like the tide were turning, no pun intended, for the Bulldogs. They were on a historic defensive run that we have gone over, and no one could touch them, it seemed like. Even once the SEC championship game came, it was thought by most to just be a formality in Georgia's special season. As we all know, the Tide, led by QB Bryce Young, had different plans, and they embarrassed their SEC foe, just about as bad as Georgia embarrassed Arkansas on the national stage earlier this year. Are these clearly the two best teams in the country? Yes. That's not even a question that can be argued. But does that equal excitement? No. It's been 41 long years for the Georgia fan base since their last national title, and that number will tick up to 42 years after Monday's rematch. Somehow Georgia is a 2.5-point favorite, and that's probably one of the easiest lines to bet that we have seen all season long. Bama wins 31-17 to claim their second straight and seventh national title under Nick Saban. That's how it's going to play out, folks. National title, Alabama again. Does it get old? Does it get boring being a Crimson Tide fan? You know, knowing you're just going to win? Does this ever get boring? It's one lucky fan base. We'll never see it again. It's one lucky fan base. All right, so let's move on to the end of the podcast. And we always end on that one thing that I hate that is not college football related. And this time, it's sports related. It's COVID related. And it's the Australia as a country stopping Novak Djokovic from playing in the Australian Open. They are treating him like he is some international terrorist trying to enter their country and wreak havoc. Which, you know, according to Australia, with their Nazi-like tactics, putting people in COVID camps, they have detained Novak Djokovic after he was given the medical clearance from the Australian Open. He gave them the documents. He provided enough information to get clearance. He was told, come, compete, possibly overtake Federer and Nadal as the most majors in tennis history. Come on down and play. But the Australian government said, no. And they have locked him away, detained him. One of the best tennis players of all time. One of the most recognizable famous people in the world, all because he is unvaccinated and is not willing to get vaccinated. And Australia treats him like he is a war criminal. This shit needs to stop. Let Novak Djokovic play. If you want to make him wear a mask everywhere he fucking goes, if you want to lock him into a room and say you can only come out to practice and play, let that be. But stop with this shit. It's getting out of hand. Also, a quick update on a previous thing that I hate, and that was that water pressure. You know, the shower head with the poor water pressure. Well, I gotta say, one of my Christmas gifts this year was a new shower head, and the water pressure in there is unlike anything I have felt in my entire life. I have never felt cleaner getting out of a shower. It is a game changer. If you never had poor water pressure, you know, went to a hotel or, you know, showered at a buddy's house and has that shitty water, you don't know what I'm talking about. But when you do, you know, it's something we're talking about, because that water pressure is fantastic. All right. So let's all enjoy. Let's hope and pray for a good national title game. Baby Kirby finally does it. But we'll find out on Monday night. Until next week, from the Basement Bar Podcast. Thank you.